Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to welcome Judy West to the show. Judy is the pastor of staff and leadership development at The Crossing Church, a large multi-campus church in the St. Louis region. Judy, I am so excited to have you on the show today. I have just come to admire you and respect you as not only a leader, but also just as a friend and as a confidant. So I'm just excited for our listening audience to hear your story today. And so let's just jump right in. Let's talk a little bit about your background. I know you grew up on the East Coast.
I did. Raised as an East Coaster. Yep.
So talk to us a little bit about that. Talk to us a little bit about your family background, how you grew up. And then I want you to talk a little bit. I know that you are a star athlete, and you were and you still are, and want to talk to a little bit about that.
Okay. We're raised in a small town, little bitty town in Pennsylvania. I would say probably out of everything in my life, running helped define who I am today. It was actually a middle school PE teacher that saw me run the mile that called me into high school sports and said, would you try distance running? And at that point, I thought, no, I want to be cool. I want to be a cheerleader or something. And he convinced me, said, would you at least give it a shot? Would you try cross country, which is 3.1 miles outside on grass? And my third race in, I won, and then went 45-0 my high school career. Ended up being a Pennsylvania state champion in outdoor track. And I would say, hands down, that's what gave me the confidence to start leading. That really set me on a trajectory then to go run Division I in college. It was a small university, Bucknell University, but it was still Division I. So ran there, was 11-time East Coast Conference champion, met my sweetheart there, Steve. He was an academic All-American, and we got married there at our chapel at our university. So running has really been a really important part of my leadership, but also got to experience at Bucknell. I was the first student athlete to sit on a Title IX committee. I was the student athlete selected to pick our new athletic director. A lot of leadership opportunities came through running. I was the president of Mortar Board at Bucknell, which is the National Leadership Honorship and Service Society. So it's just been a blessing to watch how running has been a part of that leadership journey for me.
Yeah, so I just know there that a lot of great leaders were former athletes. I mean, Enterprise Rent-A-Car here
Enterprise,
in St.
Exactly.
Louis is a
they hire athletes.
They do. That is NCAA. One of their prerequisites.
Exactly right.
We love them. They're a great client of ours. And so talk to us a little bit about that. What do you think the psychology is there, Judy?
Oh, I know what it is. I've lived it. So much of sport is discipline. You have to be disciplined, especially in a solo sport like running, when oftentimes you don't have teammates to rely on or to hold you accountable. It's that discipline to get up when it's 12 degrees outside and strap on your shoes and go for a run. So a lot of it is discipline, a lot of it's dedication. My dad always told me growing up that 99% of it is mental, period. 1% is talent. Most athletes that make it, it is literally the mental game. Can you break through the hard times? Can you strap on the running shoes? Can you just break through those emotional and mental barriers to be the athlete? athlete. So I would say that's a lot of why places, corporations like Enterprise alone, go after the NCAA athlete because they know that's part of their makeup, their DNA.
Yeah, and they've got a great work ethic.
Work ethic is huge.
They know that these people know how to work hard.
Work ethic, follow through,
yes.
A lot of character building, strong character. Mm-hmm. And lots of times you'll find athletes with a sense of humility because you've had to experience loss. You've had to learn how to navigate loss.
Yeah.
Because most athletes don't make it through because you can't win everything. You can't set a personal record every time you run. Mm-hmm. You can't win every game. So a lot of athletes learn how to navigate loss.
Yeah. And you have to develop that mental toughness because loss can be loss. I mean, you grieve over that, right? But you can go either way. You can either pick yourself up by the bootstraps and jump in the saddle again or not,
right?
So that's interesting. And I know that you led a group of, 1,000 runners? You started a women's running group, didn't you?
Well, back in the day when we first moved here to St. Louis, I had my first baby, and I got a call from a former teammate from Bucknell that said, would you be willing to train for the Hood to Coast Relay? The Hood to Coast Relay is in Oregon. It's the longest relay in the world, and we all had to be able to run 3 times about 6 miles, so I had to be ready to run about 21 miles in 6-minute pace. So I walked to my next-door neighbor, and I said, I will teach you how to run. This was a 40-year-old mom. I will teach you how to run if you train with me. Well, word got out that Judy West was training middle-aged women how to run and started Team Windsor, which I did that for 9 years, ended up being one of the nation's largest women's running and walking groups. Did that for 9 years, went into retirement for a few years, and then with our affiliation through the church, Living Water International, then I coached, started Team Living Water. And that was what I coached for 6 years.
Okay.
Trained about 1,000 runners to run the half marathon and a 5K as well. We raised almost $500,000 for the clean water movement. That's my true passion with running, is to take somebody who doesn't think they'd ever be able to do it, to stand at the finish line at the St. Louis half marathon and to watch hundreds of people cross the finish line. That's better than any gold medal I could ever win.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when the recipients were folks that need clean water.
Sure.
So yeah, it's been my joy to lead that.
That is so awesome. That is so awesome. I do want to talk about that a little bit more. Well, talk to us a little bit about what was your degree in? Kind of talk to us a little bit about your educational background.
Educational background. Mm-hmm. I received my undergrad in sociology and then my master's degree in education with a specialty in elementary and secondary guidance counseling.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so did you practice?
Was an elementary school guidance counselor outside of Philadelphia for a year. Our school district, by the way, we had the first child with HIV. I was in the heat of the moment trying to figure out in the early 90s how to deal with the stigma of HIV and AIDS in the school district. It was pandemonium. That was in Philadelphia. We literally had one of the first kids in the United States and had to navigate that. So I learned a lot. That was a school of hard knocks through all that. But then we moved here, and that's when my story took off in St. Louis.
Right. Yeah. So I want to back up a minute. I want you to talk about your sweetheart, Steve.
Yes.
He is a doctor, correct?
Yes. He graduated with a biology degree at Bucknell and then went to the University of Pennsylvania. Medical school in Philadelphia. And when we matched for residency, we ended up matching here. He matched at WashU for head and neck surgery.
I'm so glad.
Yes, so am I.
So glad. Yes. And talk to us a little bit about your other treasures, your two children, Jordan and Anna.
Our two children.
Yes.
Yes. So Jordan came out of the womb as an athlete. The kid was shooting basketballs by age 2. So he was into soccer. We asked him, by your sophomore year in high school, would you at least try running? And he fell in love with the sport and ended up running for a local high school, Lafayette High School, and then went and ran Division I for Baylor University.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, he's a grad assistant coach at Baylor for cross country and track and indoor track. Yeah. Anna, on the other hand, she's my story. I'm going to write a book about her. Yes, I'm going to write a book about her one day. She never got off the couch. We kept looking at each other and saying, whose child is this? She never played with a doll, never colored, never played sports, would do nothing. And finally, by her freshman year in high school, we told her, you have to do something. We don't care if it's the chess club. You have to do something. And her brother said, Anna, just try running. would you join me on the Lafayette team? And within 3 months, she was on the state podium. She was a four-time Missouri state champion, and now she's at the University of Michigan, and they were just on the top podium at NCAAs, fourth place. So it's incredible just watching this young little emerging leader woman go from the couch to now a multi-state champion and Division I award winner.
Right. I definitely think there's a book in there.
There's a book
from
in there.
From the couch to
from the couch, to the couch to the podium. Exactly.
You know, there's several things that are running through my mind, but one of the things that I think is the common thread, you had a gym teacher that saw something in you, Judy, that you didn't even see in yourself. You're thinking, no, I want to be a cheerleader. I want to do something like that. But that gym teacher saw something in you and really spoke words into you that you should try this.
Yep.
And I'm thinking about Jordan speaking into Anna. Come on, Anna, just try this.
Yep.
How important is it to have people in your life that actually speak those words of life to you?
First of all, I have the highest respect for teachers and coaches because oftentimes they have more hours in the day with a child than sometimes parents do.
Absolutely.
And they see different talents and gifts sometimes than a parent does. And so when you take time to call out greatness in a kid, you have no idea the legacy that could leave and the impact you could have. So because that was so crucial for me, that's part of my leadership here. And that's why I teach a leadership class here at The Crossing. And we might get to that in a little bit. But every single human was somehow given gifts and talents. And if you can help them figure out what that is,
it can be life-changing.
It can be a game changer.
It can be a game changer for
and
that
my coach in high school and college, I mean, always called it the eye of the hunter. Like, you always need to be looking around in the eye of the hunter to look for the greatness. So I've had that in my brain my whole life, to have the eye of the hunter.
I like
for
that.
Whether it's an athlete, a leader, it doesn't matter what, an influencer, a world changer, to find that. And what's interesting, what you just said about Jordan, is part of his DNA is that. And the Lafayette boys ended up winning the high school championships in the state of Missouri, and almost every single kid was recruited by Jordan West.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I had parents come up and say to me, my kid is who he is because of Jordan West. And that, talk about
that's
like
got to
that,
make you feel good as a parent.
Yes.
And just him seeing that probably modeled in you guys. You
the
know,
fact
you
if my kid can call out greatness in somebody else, that's a victory.
Well, I think that's one of the major tenets of a leader, you know, is to bring out the best in people and help them be the best version of themselves. So,
you're exactly right.
Yeah. Let's talk about, so you had this educational background and you worked in Pennsylvania in that. So how did you go from corporate like that to church work?
Yeah. Well, I also back in Pennsylvania had a stint as a Division I coach with Villanova.
Okay.
So I got that experience. I was the guidance counselor experience. We moved here. And to make a long story short, I'll just give your listeners a little nugget of it. But by the time we moved here from Philadelphia, folks refer to me now as the feminazi, atheist, F-bomb dropping crazy woman from Philadelphia. So we moved here and very anti-God, anti-church, thought Christians were wackadoodles, but was really lost and seeking something and was invited to this brand new startup church called The Crossing. And I went, and it was the very first place where they let me ask anything I wanted. Who wrote the Bible? How do I trust it? What about dinosaurs? What about homosexuality? What about women's rights? What about evolution? It was the first place.
It didn't scare them.
They never laughed. They never judged me. They never rolled their eyes. And I didn't realize there was so much evidence behind the Christian faith. I thought it was a bunch of fairy tales. I didn't realize the historical evidence, the manuscript evidence, all of the evidence. And after 8 months, there was so much evidence. I ended up giving my life to Jesus. And then the story took off from there because it was my next door neighbor that ended up being the pastor here and invited me in. He knew my leadership background. He knew my running background, my counseling, my coaching background. And he had that eye of the hunter and said, there's something in her for leadership development. I was the first lateral higher at the crossing. So if you think of silos in a corporation or a church, whatever. So in church, there's kids ministry, youth ministry, music, stuff like that, outreach. I was the first lateral hire that came through as leadership glue to hold everything together. And he had enough insight and enough moral courage to ask the board of directors at that time, can I take a risk on this former atheist, now Jesus follower, to come on board? And that was 20 years ago. Yeah. I just celebrated my 20th year here. And what was great is I was allowed to mature as the church matured and as the church grew.
I love that, Judy. I cannot wait to hear. There has been explosive growth here. You have seen it go from very small to explosive. And I want the listening audience to hear about that. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Judy West. Hey, everyone. I want to tell you about something so cool going on right now in the Nichols household. Allie, our wonderful daughter and the inspiration for Something Extra, is competing in the Dancing with the St. Louis Stars event this January. Allie will be the Something Extra for the night, and we need your help. Please go to lisagailnichols.com/vote, watch a video of Allie's story, and get all the links to vote. Each vote is $10, and you can vote as many times as you like. All of the proceeds support the Independence Center, a community-based rehabilitation program for adults with severe and persistent mental illnesses. This is a fantastic organization, and voting for Allie is a great way to support the important work they are doing. And we want Allie to win. Pause the show, go over to lisagailnichols.com/vote, and join Team Allie. Welcome back. Judy, we had a little cliffhanger there. I want you to tell our listening audience, you started when the Crossing had, what, 8 members?
Well, it started with 8 members in the living room in 1991. We moved here in 1994, right when they started their first public services at Marquette High School. So by that time, when I walked through the doors, there was probably 50 to 100 people. Mm-hmm. So it was still very, very tiny.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the here to there. So now we have multi-sites.
So now, that was 1994. Now we have 4 campuses plus online. Average weekend attendance is right around 8,000. Big holidays, Christmas, Easter is around 20,000, about 150 staff members. So it has been a ride.
Yes, it has.
Starting from a small organization to a multi-site organization, it has changed everything about us, our DNA, our structures, our leadership. You know, all of your listeners know who've been part of corporate growth. A church setting doesn't matter what. When you go from something that small to this big, it changes your leadership. It has to.
So talk about some of those things. What were some of the things that were some of the first things that had to change and evolve as you guys were growing?
Well, I would say our lead pastor from the very beginning, he was very strategic with who he put around himself. And that goes back to John Maxwell's The Law of the Inner Circle.
Absolutely.
He was very, very strategic. Didn't put the same voices, wanted a diversity of voices, diversity of ages, backgrounds. I think key leaders know that diversity and who you put in that inner circle defines your potential. So from very early on, he was very discerning about that.
Right. And you hear that all the time with companies now. The buzz is diversity and inclusion.
Yep.
Diversity and inclusion.
Absolutely.
So I'm with you. I do believe the diversity of thought that comes from various experiences and backgrounds, gender, race,
age,
all of those things. It's incredibly important. What do you see? I mean, you guys have certainly done that at the Crossing.
Well, really early on, as a leader, you have to be strategic or it just doesn't happen. You know that.
You have to be
intentional. If you don't invite people to the table, it doesn't happen. People will migrate to their own people groups, their own gender groups. It doesn't matter what group you put in there. And so it's really being strategic, once again, the eye of the hunter, of going out and saying, I see something in you. Would you come to the table? I need you. And inviting them to the table. And that's what Greg did very early on. And lots of times you had to take a risk, especially for your listeners that don't know the church world very well. There are denominations. There's other things where women aren't allowed to have a voice because scripture has been misinterpreted. So for him very early on to say, nope, we are going to unpack and figure out what scripture says, and I will invite women to the table. Absolutely. So he took risks and invited. Mm-hmm. I was one of those that he invited to the mm-hmm. table.
I'm glad he did.
So am I.
So talk to us, because I want to come back to that. That's a great segue into something else I want to talk about. Is there anything else that really that you want to highlight that you guys had to change and evolve, you know, as the church was growing?
So risk taking is number one. Mm-hmm. You cannot be afraid of failure. We would ready, fire, aim, that whole concept. We did not have a problem acknowledging our failures and burying the dead cows in the backyard. I know a lot of people are afraid to bury dead cows.
Yes.
We very early on embraced
There's
boundaries.
No sacred cows,
so
right.
No sacred cows, but we embraced boundaries. And part of that was having to say no to people, to events, to really good things. Mm-hmm. But we knew to make the long haul, we had to have a focus and not say yes to everything. And that is so hard to do, especially when it's really good stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
So had to keep that focus. Those were some of the biggies. Timing was everything. Mm-hmm. There were often times where we would be presented with an opportunity and we would have to do the not now. Hold on, hold on, hold on now. Mm-hmm. So timing was crucial to us. Momentum, buy-in, all those key basic leadership things were really, really important. But also that's where the EQ came into it too. When you talk about even your inner circle, mm-hmm. part of it was assessing, trying to assess who has a high EQ. Because as you now know, with organizational health, EQ and the emotional health of people can make or break your organization.
Absolutely, it can. It's so important to have that emotional quotient going on. So you kind of touched on something, and I want to dig a little bit further into that. You know, what do you see, Judy, as some of the unique challenges that women face in leadership? And you can talk from your own experience, but, you know, I mean, all women face some unique challenges. So I want to hear what you think.
One of my dear friends and mentors, Katie Cole, just wrote a book. It's coming out in a few months.
Oh, good.
On this topic.
Good.
And she interviewed hundreds of women around the nation, and I was one of the people she interviewed. But some of the unique challenges are stuff you face every day, okay? And it's silly little things. Like, I've been to executive pastor meetings where I'm one of two women in the room, and you're not even talked to. You're not addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are, it's little things like, so how are your children? You know, they
right.
don't think of asking you leadership questions.
Sure.
And you don't want to ram your way into the conversation, but you almost have to be in a world that sometimes is more man-heavy than woman-heavy.
Right. I like to say, you need to be assertive.
You have to be assertive.
I'm not,
boldly assertive.
Right. I'm not one for aggressive.
You have to.
But assertive.
But it's
you do
silly
have to
little
that.
Things.
Right.
And this is one thing she quoted for me in the book is, I'm 5 foot tall and a half of an inch. It's little things like when I go in a meeting, I have to wear heels so I can even look at somebody's chin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's silly little things like that
right.
that you don't even think of. Little things like when I leave a meeting, most men don't have to scan the parking lot to see if it's safe. When I leave a meeting at night,
mm-hmm.
there's been times due to security issues, I have to be escorted to my car. You know, my husband doesn't think of things like that.
Right.
There's little things that oftentimes women have to think about that I think men take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of my role now is helping educate men on those things. So number one, they don't take it for granted, but they help other women get incorporated into leadership in an effective way.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Well, and I know that you are an advocate for women. So that brings me to another question. You do some volunteering for a safe house for girls that have been rescued from sex trafficking. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yep.
And so such an important issue
yeah.
that we all need to.
It all started with one of my heroes. I was teaching a class here, and a woman came up and asked if she could speak to me. She had questions about the Bible and about dinosaurs. That's our little joke now.
Uh-huh.
And in essence, that's
and
not
And you'd already gone through all those
all
questions.
All of that. And the class had already covered all of that.
Yes.
And I thought it was really interesting. Why is this woman asking me about dinosaurs in the Bible? Well, what it came down to was, are you a safe person? Because I now need to tell you what I do for a living. And what she had to tell me was that she was selling herself. And conversation after conversation, just the coolest things happened. She now ended her life of prostitution and being on the streets. She's now happily married. I got to help her wedding at her wedding.
That's wonderful.
But it set me on a trajectory because her and a lot of other people, women that come through our doors, were abused as children, raped as children. She was 6 years old, and it was a school crossing guard. And a lot of the women that end up here, you would never, ever, ever know that they were either in the industry, they were being trafficked. You would not know from external appearances. And so it really set me on a trajectory to figure out how I can serve those not only impacted by the industry and human trafficking, but also now where my big passion is figure out how to get on the proactive end. Because I don't know if your listeners know this, the average buyer is a married man with two kids that fill our churches, that fill our organizations, that are in corporate America, you name it. But that comes from a place of hurt and woundedness. So I'm really trying to figure out how do we get on the proactive end of this? But yeah, it's a joy and an honor to work with these survivors because they're survivors.
Absolutely.
They are heroes.
Absolutely, they are. Well, so is there a way that if somebody in our listening audience said, yeah, that resonates with me, I could get behind something like that, how would you suggest that they get involved?
What we always do, because the issue is safe houses very appropriately screen their volunteers.
Absolutely. They should.
And they have to, because a lot of them are under FBI security and stuff, the girls, the women. So they have to very appropriately screen. So what we ask anybody that expresses an interest, first of all, start by educating yourself. Just go to Netflix. There's wonderful documentaries. Be careful. Make sure there's not young eyes in the room when you watch these documentaries. There's one called Tricked that's out right now that it'll make sure you're ready for it. But you can now research and do just watch, read articles, stories. Just educate yourself what to look for. Those of you listening in St. Louis alone, we're one of the top hubs in the United States for trafficking. Any city that has major highways, major sporting team, and major conventions, and then you add the gambling, the boats, all that on top of it, they're major hubs. So please educate yourself. That's what I tell men and women all the time. When you're in an airport, educate yourself. If there's a man with a young woman walking a few steps behind, looking down, if you're at a gas station, you know, I've pulled up alongside of cars and followed cars and reported to the police because I saw suspicious activity.
Sure. It's better to report
It's better to report. It's better to report.
If it looks suspicious, it's better to report.
But make sure you educate yourself because it's a very misunderstood tragedy right now. A lot of people think that survivors of human trafficking have been kidnapped, and that's absolutely false. So we're working with a woman right now. This is, the woman's in her 40s, okay? She fell in love with a guy. They were dating for a year. No signs, no nothing. He says, honey, let's go to Mexico on vacation. Takes her to Mexico, drugs her. For 2 years, she's held hostage and in captivity. This was a guy she loved, was going to marry. Drugs her and traffics her. He leaves her there. And she ends up saying, I can't survive this, is in a hotel, goes to jump out of a window, because a guy thinks she's a prostitute, hires her as a prostitute, goes to jump out of a window, and he says, what are you doing? And she says, I'm being trafficked. He helps her escape back to the United States. And it's just being uneducated. Like, she had to sit and say, I'm not a prostitute for hire. I'm being trafficked right now. So what I tell folks all the time is know what to look for. You could help this crisis if you knew what to look for.
Absolutely. So, Judy, there are a lot of great things going on around this issue. But why did you, out of all the things going on, why did you decide to pick the organization to work with that you are working with?
Well, first of all, you're right. It's one of the big things going on in the United States right now, fighting human trafficking. And there's great, great organizations in St. Louis. We talked to a lot of them. The one we picked, literally, it goes back to leadership. We loved their leaders. And we saw a lot of traits in the leaders that we were drawn to. And that goes back to the inner circle.
Sure.
I was looking for those people that I would feel comfortable in my own inner circle that I would feel comfortable working with.
So let's talk a little bit about something extra. What do you believe the something extra is in the leaders that are leading that organization?
Yep. And it all goes back to that inner circle.
Okay.
Something extra for me is those leaders that have the keen awareness and wisdom to invite people into their inner circle. And when I teach this concept, you have to know, what are you looking for? Because if you don't know what you're looking for, you'll settle for yuck. So a lot of it is, for my inner circle, I'm going to speak for me, and Lisa, I'd love your thoughts too, but it's people that are trustworthy.
Absolutely.
That can keep confidences. Mm-hmm. They don't gossip. They follow through. They ask curious questions. I look for folks in my inner circle when crisis happens. They don't ramp up. Instead, they calm down. They're the calm in the storm. Mm-hmm. They don't panic. And I think one of my top key indicators is if I'm going through something rough at the end of the conversation, they've given me hope instead of doubt and confusion.
Sure.
And you know immediately, you know, Lisa, when you're talking to somebody at the end of the conversation, if you leave feeling a step forward instead of a step back, that's a key indicator if they should be in your inner circle.
I love that. I just think that is a great thing for all of us to remember as we are conversing with people and having these crucial conversations. We need to always be focused on leaving people better.
When I was teaching this in Africa, they call it PDS, the pull down syndrome.
Okay.
Like all these women leaders, 400 leaders were talking about that they try not to pull PDS people into their inner circle, the pull down syndrome.
Right.
Because those folks end up making you feel worse, and that impacts your leadership and it impacts your influence.
Well, you said that sometimes you will ask, what traits do you want in leader? And that's hard for them. But then you say, what traits don't you want?
Don't you want? It's sometimes easier.
It's so easier to
I don't
point
want people
off.
That gossip.
Right.
You know, I don't want people to talk behind my back. I don't want people to disclose information they're not supposed to.
It really boils down to trust.
Yep, trust.
Really, that these people are trustworthy.
Trustworthy.
Very good.
And sometimes that's hard to assess right out of the gun.
It is.
And so it's giving baby steps. That's what I tell people. Please, not right out of the gun. Don't trust them with everything. Trust them with something small and see
that's
if they're
advice.
Faithful to that something small. Hands down, you want to ask for leadership mistakes? Number one lesson is I invited somebody in too quickly, and they weren't either mature enough for it, they couldn't handle it, and it came back to bite me in the behind or our organization. And so that's what I would say. Just don't be too quick to invite somebody into that inner circle.
Well, you know, we say that in hiring. Be slow to hire and quick to fire, you know, but slow to hire to make sure that you're getting and vetting that person before you invite them in.
Absolutely.
But that is really great advice. So, Judy, as we wrap up, one of the things we haven't talked about is this is really a church that attracts corporate leaders. I'm one of them. We've got Boeing here and Enterprise and Monsanto or Bayer. We've got all these different corporate leaders. So for our listening audience out there that wants to learn more about leadership and leadership development, we're doing a lot of those things.
We're doing a lot of it.
Can you talk a little bit about that and how they can get plugged in?
Sure, absolutely. Well, first of all, I direct everybody to the website, the crossing.church website. But we have groups and classes. I teach a leadership class alone. We have financial classes, emotional and spiritual health. We have corporate leaders come here and take a class. You can also take it online, by the way, that deals with conflict resolution and boundaries. Lost count how many corporate leaders, principals, have taken the class, and it says it's changed their organization. So we really feel called to invest in leaders in the community. So I would say, if you want any more information, go to the website, or you can email info@thecrossing.church. Ask for me, Judy West, and I would love to help resource you.
Great. Well, thank you. This has been so much fun today.
Well, thank you.
And I'm excited.
Thanks for inviting me, Lisa.
Absolutely.
It's been an honor.
It's been great.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2018. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit lisagailnichols.com/somethingextra. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen.